From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Governor Jerry Brown has a $200 billion budget deal on his desk. He has until Friday to meet the California deadline to sign it. State Senator Holly Mitchell is the chair of the Committee on Budget and Fiscal Review, and she's joining us from the Capitol in Sacramento. Good morning, Senator Mitchell. Thanks for joining us again on Insight.
Good morning. As always, thank you so much for having me.
So $200 billion is, let's just say it, an enormous number. What does the number, just from the get-go, mean to you about this state?
Well, the number, for me, means that it's a reasonable, responsible budget that includes investments for the needs of California and Californians. I think it reflects both investments in human and kind of physical infrastructure, as well as responsible savings in multiple rainy day savings accounts. So it's a good budget.
All lawmakers want a budget to move the state forward in some way. So in that sense, from your view, what's the headline about this budget? What's the headline about how the state moves forward?
Ooh, that's a great question, because headlines suggest just like focusing on one kind of topic, and it would be hard for me to do that. I think the headline is it's balanced. It represents two historic actions, a historic high investment in K-12 education, a historic investment in our effort to eliminate childhood deep poverty by making the first-time investment in increasing the CalWORKs grants in over 40 years. But it also reflects the highest level of savings on record. So I think the fact that we made history with this budget would be an easy kind of tagline.
By the way, nice answer on that question. Some of what's been written about this is that there was frustration for healthcare advocates. They were looking for more money to reduce the cost of health insurance premiums, expand access to Medi-Cal. What about some of what didn't happen in this budget?
And they're absolutely right. We heard that as recent as yesterday in a full budget committee hearing, where we were hearing trailer bills that will help us operationalize the investments on the healthcare side. The trailer bill that tells us how we're going to spend Prop 56 dollars. And the advocates stepped up, and they're absolutely right. My colleague, Senator Ricardo Lara, gave an eloquent floor speech last week, a painful one, where he brought residents who were in the gallery from all over the state, you know, hardworking California residents who don't have access to what I believe everyone should be entitled to, access to healthcare services. So we did not, in the final deal, expand access to undocumented Californians. We did that for children last year. It was the hope of both the Assembly and the Senate that we could expand it to both younger undocumented residents and seniors, 64 and older. This bill, the budget bill, does not include that coverage.
I do want to get a little deeper into an aspect of childcare that's important to you. But before we go there, one of the comments from Senate Leader Tony Atkins is that in talking about the budget, she said, "We've recovered from the darkest days of the recession, and now the state's fiscal outlook is the strongest it's been in a generation." I think she's speaking especially to the rainy day fund, but are you as optimistic and sure about where we are, in spite of California having a volatile economy, as what she just expressed in those words?
I absolutely am. And the pro tem and I came in together. We were both elected in 2010 and elected to the Assembly together. And we both painfully remember those first couple of budgets that we had to vote on when we were still in the cut and recovery kind of mode. And I think this legislature and this administration, this governor, have acted responsibly. There have been years where we didn't invest and reinvest in areas where I would like to have. But I think when I look back over the 8 years, we've made strong incremental progress. Sometimes there have been really tiny baby steps. For example, you talked about childcare. Our investment in early care and education, we've made progress compared to the $1 billion cut the state experienced in 2008. We've made incremental progress. And so I think the pro tem is absolutely right. Again, thanks to the voters, thanks to the vision of the governor, we have now multiple rainy day funds that this year we maxed out. in terms of what we can under the Constitution contribute towards in them. So I think I agree with her. It looks good.
You have highlighted that this budget reflects the highest investment in K-14 school funding in history. There's also money in higher education. And yet, I know you're following the governor's race, and the candidates for governor are talking about how much we need emphasis on education in the state, how far behind California continues to be, how lacking this administration has been in its attention to education funding, including lawmakers in their decision making. So what's that disconnect all about?
Well, I think there's candidate speak and then there's governance. And I fully appreciate the candidates raising these issues. I think whoever is governor come January will be fortunate to inherit a healthy California economy and a healthy state general fund, which this current administration did not inherit 8 years ago. And so it will then be up to them to do what they think is best with the pot of gold that will be left to them by the current administration, healthy rainy day funds. And it'll be up to them to work collaboratively with the legislature to figure out what's next in the best interest of California as a whole.
I'll have to remember to ask the next governor if he feels like he has a pot of gold in looking at the state budget.
Well, what he will not inherit, and I can say he since we're after the primary, what he will not inherit, if you'll recall in 2011 when we all took the oath of office, Governor Brown convened a summit, if you will, where he brought in leaders from across the state. There were mayors and members of boards of supervisors from across the state at the convention center across the street from the Capitol. And he showed an inverted bar graph that projected out several budget years. And at the rate we were going, without direct action, without the ballot initiative that allowed us to extend the sales tax revenue, without some clear actions taken by both the legislature and the governor, we were going to continue to be in the deep, dark recesses of being below sea level, if you will, right, in terms of the state's income. And so the incoming governor will not have that outlook to have to manage.
You're listening to California State Senator Holly Mitchell. She's joining us from the Capitol. She's been the chair of the Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Committee since December of 2016. She's the first African-American to chair that committee, and she represents Senate District 30, which includes Culver City and much of Los Angeles. So let's get to what I alluded to, this specific effort toward Black infant health and the programs surrounding it. This became important to you, as I understand it, when you explored what other states were doing and how much more California could be doing than it was. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, I think my personal history with the Black Infant Health Program in the state of California goes back maybe 25 years. It was a Sacramento Bee article that introduced me to a local organization here in Sacramento, the Birthing Project. And the Sacramento Bee article, literally 25 or 30 years ago, I hate to admit, focused on the disproportionate number of Black infants who were dying. The Black infant mortality and morbidity rate in Sacramento County was higher than compared to any comparable county across the state of California. And the county public health department, the state public health department really wanted to know why. And so that was my first introduction. I was a young staffer at the time here in the building, staff in the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. And so it was an issue that I followed up on based on California's alarmingly high rate of Black infant mortality.
It is true, though, that other states are handling Black infant health differently than California and funding it differently, right?
They are. And a part of what we were able to do working collaboratively with a local organization, the local foundation, the public health director in my home county of LA County, is we looked nationwide at a number of model programs that are research based that are showing significant improvements in the infant mortality rate, a number of interesting models that are both kind of social support, linked with federally qualified health centers. So we looked at a variety of these new models and for the first time in many years provided a significant infusion of dollars into the state's program to allow counties and nonprofits and health providers to partner and seek out grants to be able to try these new models here in California.
You've set up nicely how to describe what the grants are doing, the increase in funding. And then if you would connect that to how that can shift statistics, I think we get more of a picture of the connection, the money connection.
Yeah, well, it's been amazing as we've looked nationwide at these policies to look at how many states and municipalities have been able to significantly decrease their black infant mortality rate. You know, currently it's 2 and 3 times that of our white counterparts. And so some of these models literally have been able to cut their infant mortality rate in half, if not more. And so we're hoping to use these models here in California and see what some of these practices do. There are 46 states across the U.S. that are doing some of these evidence-based programs, and we wanted California to step up to the plate and join them.
To get specifically to the outreach, I found it intriguing that the main question that's posed to people who might interface with these grant programs is, do you want to become pregnant in the next year?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Talk about why the question is posed that way and how it can be answered and then what happens next.
Well, that was a great model that was actually introduced to me by the director of the public health department, L.A. County. And it really is a clinic-based program that really helps. The current model comes from South Carolina, and it really helps engage the woman, if you will, and her health provider in a proactive dialogue about her intentions to make sure that we help improve her own health status prior to becoming pregnant. And so if the question is posed to me and I think about it and I tell my health provider yes, then my health provider can be much more proactive in helping me manage my weight, helping me manage my blood pressure, helping me manage whatever health stressors that I may be currently experiencing, quite frankly, as a black woman in America, that compromises my ability to deliver a full-term baby. And so it's a proactive way to engage with my healthcare provider to really help me plan better.
Senator Mitchell, can you be specific about the connection that's been established between black infant health and racism or racial discrimination?
Well, you know, I think scientists and doctors and community folks, lay advocates, have really spent decades trying to understand why African Americans are so vulnerable to lower birth weight and really losing their babies. And there's a growing consensus now that racial discrimination experienced by black women across their lifetime makes us less likely to be able to carry our babies to full term, which is tragic. Because when we look at the data, it's black women, regardless of their income, their class, their educational attainment. Those typical indicators for poor health outcome don't seem to be the driving force around our black infant mortality morbidity rate. And so we had to look beyond that. And so what does a low-income black woman, a middle-class, upper-middle-class black woman have in common? And that is the fact that she's black and that she experiences stressors throughout the course of her lifetime that impact her physical body, her physical health. That's what the new research is pointing towards. And those are the larger systemic issues that we're going to have to address if we want to truly impact this embarrassing rate. There are, quite frankly, third world countries who have better birth outcomes for the larger segments of their population than California or the U.S. does with regard to black women.
Back to the question then to the women, if it is, do you want to become pregnant in the next year? And the answer is no, then what's the pathway?
Well, I think that, you know, that's just one of the program elements that they have found successful. And it really is a way of engaging in a conversation about chronic disease management. And so we have to talk about stress. We have to talk about blood pressure. We have to talk about how we manage our physical wellness in a society that attacks you on a daily basis. Lots of conversation right now about race in this country and those who inflict it and those who are subject to the isms associated with it. And so even if you don't answer that question, yes, I intend to become pregnant within the next year, it is still an important realization between the woman and her healthcare provider about how the greater society ills can impact your wellness.
Fatherhood and the partnership of parenting does play a role in here, too. I don't want to leave that out of the equation.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And there are fatherhood and partnership initiatives that support engagement in this process. And so, again, research shows that positive child health outcomes are connected to engagement with fathers and partners in a broader community. And so at this point, there's not a statewide program to coordinate the current rather patchwork fatherhood programs county by county. And so we're hoping that through these resources that can be accomplished.
And to the resources specifically, it's a new pot of $8 million. Is that correct?
Yes, it's $8 million on top of the current annual budget for the state program, which is at $4 million general fund. So we've doubled the current investment to create this unique opportunity to model new programs in California, new research-based progressive programs that we see in other states have made a significant difference. And we're hoping this infusion of new dollars will bring forth the same outcome for California.
So that means that we need to talk about this again. That means that we need to track whether there are results and how soon. And I don't know what the expectations are, but I do want the follow-up.
I agree, and I think it's a broader conversation, again, around access to health services and what impacts a person's ability to be well. Mm-hmm. You know, the California Endowment did an amazing kind of public research project that tracked your life expectancy to your zip code.
So,
our broader conversation about what impacts our ability to be healthy, you know, recognizing that violence is a public health issue. Those are things that I hope we can continue to have the conversation, because birth outcome is a consequence of a lifetime of health and wellness.
Thank you so much, as always, for your time. I appreciate this conversation, and we'll look forward to the next one.
Thank you so much.
That is California State Senator Holly Mitchell from District 30 in Southern California. She's the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. You can find more coverage of this year's pending budget plan. And of course, we'll let you know when the governor signs the deal. That will be at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.